Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir,
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am one of your hosts, Fat Thor. And unfortunately, Gorgon and Cap are going to be off saving the world again. But in their place, I am joined by a very special guest. You may know him as the co-founder of Metal Ninja Studios. He is the writer of the Dust County Chronicles. And he is also a letterer for a bunch of different books, but mainly for Scout Comics, Merc Magazine. You may know some books such as Black Market Heroin, Death Rage. I am joined by none other than Joel Rodriguez. My friend, thank you so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me. It's I'm looking forward to this. Let's talk some nerdy stuff.
Yes, sir. Let's get into all the nerdy stuff. So like I just mentioned, you're a writer of a book, but you're also a letterer, which I find super, super interesting. I think lettering is one of those like kind of forgotten arts. And you've actually even said this yourself, but it's one of those things where if it's good, you typically don't notice it. And if it's bad, you really do notice it. So, like I said, I'm super excited to get into all like the kind of lettering nuances and stuff, because I think that's super, super interesting. But before we get into that, I want to kind of take it back a little bit. And so typically on the show, we usually do kind of a comic origin story, if you would. Now, I saw that you have talked about you were a comic fan ever since you were a kid, like most of us here. Your first issue that really kind of grabbed you was Spawn number one. And you said that the art and specifically the lettering really kind of took you aback. And that like was what really grabbed you. But so for this time, I kind of want to switch it up a little bit. And instead of talking strictly comics, I want to ask you about your horror origin story. So the book that you're writing from the Dust County Chronicles is very horror driven. We got a lot of cool monsters in there. So I'm curious, you obviously are a fan of horror, and I'm curious, where did that kind of love begin for you? Was it, you know, more so movies, maybe literature? So what is your horror origin, if you would?
So first off, I gotta say, you are very well researched. That was awesome.
Thank you.
I've never had my origin story told back to me. That was crazy. So it all kind of comes back to Spawn as it relates to horror in comics, but horror in general, my dad raised me young. That was basically it. Like the first horror-esque movie that I remember watching, and it's not so much a horror movie as it is a horror comedy, but when I was little, Army of Darkness was like the first horror adjacent thing that I watched. And I don't even think my dad knew that I was watching it, because I remember him sitting on the couch watching it and me kind of like sitting off to the side of the couch, just kind of leaning up against the side of the couch watching Ash get attacked by all the little mini Ashes. And I was like, that's really the first time that I remember seeing that stuff or seeing anything horror adjacent, and then going from there to all the classics. Of course, you got Friday the 13th, Halloween, Jason and Leatherface, all the slashers. I love slasher movies. Then I saw American Werewolf in London and fell in love with the monster movies. And it was just a never-ending spiral down. But then as it relates to horror in writing, that's when it really comes back to Spawn, because I still remember Spawn issue 5. That was the first comic that really gave me that shock value that I've never really gotten from anywhere else. And as a writer, I became determined to get that shock value. And for anyone who's unfamiliar with that particular issue, that's when they introduce Billy Kincaid, who's a child murderer. And there's this very particular scene, I'm not going to get too graphic with it, but a particular scene where Billy is finger painting, but using a much different take on the term finger painting. And I saw it and I was just like, whoa, that's crazy. And it stuck with me, and it's been in my head ever since. And when I became a writer, I was like, okay, that's that feeling that I got when I read that, that's what I need to somehow manage to recapture in my own writing. And basically, my writing journey has just been one story after another of trying to recapture that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to even say that. I mean, the fact that your first comic, I don't know if your first comic, but the first one that really grabbed you was Spawn, really makes sense after reading Dust County Chronicles. I was like, okay, that fits perfectly. Like I said, I think that's super interesting. I think, Spawn is definitely a character that is like sits in that kind of sweet spot of like horror and action and superhero kind of all mixed together. So, like I said, I think like it just totally makes sense that you would go on to then try and write horror books. But that kind of flashes us forward a little bit. So you went to college and you got a degree, you got, did what everyone had says you're supposed to do, got a job, and you're like, man, this sucks. This is not for me. And so you started writing. So my question on top of that is, I find that a lot of indie people that I talk to and people who kind of start their comic journey, they're doing it not necessarily like, oh, I'm, going against the establishment, but more so like they're not finding what they crave in what they're reading. So they want to add their own voice to it. So I'm curious, when you're in this job and you're not really enjoying it, and you decide like, oh, I want to try my hand at writing. What was, obviously we just talked about kind of, the Spawn and kind of capturing that thing that captured you, but was there anything else that really kind of lit the fire under you and were like, I need to add my voice to this medium? Like, this is what I want to add.
Not really. I mean, I've always loved comics. Spawn was the one that got me to actually like take an interest in the craft of comics, but I was raised on Spider-Man and the Avengers and all the superhero big two stuff. So of course at one point it was, oh, I want to work for the big two and all that. But now if you ask me, oh, do you want to work for the big two? No, I'm not really that interested. And someone even asked, well, what about Spawn? I was like, no, I do not want to mess up Spawn.
Hey, you don't want that pressure on
Exactly. No, that's like the holy grail that I never want to touch.
Yeah.
But going back to it, I was an accountant at the time and I was just so bored. I hated my job. I, like you said, I did what I was supposed to do. I was originally going to school for guitar performance and I realized that I wanted to propose to my then girlfriend, now wife. And I said, okay, well, I'm probably going to have to get a job that can actually make money. So I decided to be an accountant. Went through all of that stuff and actually started doing accounting. And I was like, this sucks. I'm not fulfilled at all. There's nothing that I enjoy about my job. I mean, the people were nice, but that was about it. And I'd always wanted to try writing, so I figured, okay, well, I'll try writing a comic. And I started looking into it. And of course, education on how to write comics is incredibly difficult to find, especially if you're someone just trying to start a hobby. Because, I mean, if you pay enough money, anyone will teach you anything. But if you're just trying to start a hobby of something and have no intention of making a career out of it, I just wanted something to pass the time, I guess. And I started going to conventions, talking to people, and I think I was at MegaCon, and I was talking to someone in Artist Alley, and they said, oh, well, submit to anthologies. I actually have an anthology. We're looking for submissions. And I said, that's fantastic. And the anthology was a horror anthology. I said, I mean, the stars are aligning. It's perfect. Let's do it. So I remember sitting in the office, and for probably the last few months while I was an accountant, I spent more time writing at my desk than I did doing math. And I'm sitting there in my office, and while I'm just trying to wrap my head around what I wanted to write for this anthology, I started thinking of A Friend in Me, the song from Toy Story. And that led me to kind of take those words and play with them a little bit, and then I got hit with what would eventually become the very first story for the Dust County Chronicles, which is the leading pitch. What if Toy Story was a slasher? And it just kind of took off from there to where I submitted that story, and they didn't want it. The anthology didn't want it. So at that point, I was faced with, okay, well, do I just shelve it and go back to being an accountant, or do I do something else with this and see what happens? I decided to obviously see what happened, and a lot has happened.
Yeah, I was gonna say, you can definitely say a lot has happened. And I mean, that just, I just really love that so much, because like you said, it was more so just kind of one thing after another. And you know, you started writing, and then you met this guy at Artist Alley, and then you wrote this story. But what I really love, and I find that this seems to be kind of a constant in your career, is I feel like a lot of people, like you just said, you did the story, you kind of shopped it around a little bit, and no one really wanted it, right? And I feel like a lot of people would, you know, just be like, oh, well, you know, I gave it my best shot. But you did not, and you stuck with it. And I think, like I said, that seems to be kind of a constant in your career. And I find that very inspiring. And like I said, I think a lot of people would just kind of be like, oh, well, I gave it a shot. Can you kind of talk a little bit about the kind of, I guess you could say, persistency that it takes for comics? And like I said, what kind of lights that fire under you, you know?
These are some awesome questions.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
So when I first started writing, everything that I was seeing, of course, I say I got into it as a hobby, but of course I was looking for something to get me out of accounting. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting with it as a hobby. And then I figure, okay, if it were to proceed, what would that mean? And of course, I'm doing my research, and I'm looking through stuff, and then everything that I'm finding says 10 years to overnight success. Like, every time you hear about an overnight success writer in comics, they've been working on stuff for 10 years, and then you finally hear about it. Mm-hmm. And I was learning in my early research that comics is basically a game of attrition. The longer you can stay in, eventually you're the only one left, so then you become the overnight success. Mm-hmm. So when I was writing the Dust County Chronicles number one, I took a sticky note, and I normally do not do sticky notes. I actually, there's a running joke between my wife and I, because she does sticky notes for everything and I hate them. So she'll leave a sticky note for me on my desk and I won't look at it, not out of malice. I just won't notice it because,
like,
I don't
is
pay
that
attention.
A sticky note?
Yeah, I just don't pay attention to sticky notes. So she was on a meeting with our marketing manager, and she thinks of something, writes it down on a sticky note, throws it on my desk, and then goes back to him. And it's like, he's going to yell at me for that. But so back to the story, I actually, in this particular case, I used a sticky note. And I pulled it off of the stack, and I wrote, by 35, was it 35? Yeah, by 35, I was going to be a full-time writer. I started when I was 25. And I stuck it up on my desk, and that was my goal. And I figured I'll stick with it, see what happens for those 10 years. And by 35, my goal was to be in comics full time as a writer. Well, one thing, I'm a big believer in words and definitions, and how you define things essentially can guide your life. And one such word is luck. And I define luck as being able and willing to say yes when an opportunity arises. And it's kind of a little joke that I have where if something comes up, I'll say yes, and then I'll figure out how to do it later. And that's pretty much how my entire career has been built, because I started writing, and then I realized I needed an artist. So I found an artist, and then I was going to try and save some money. So I taught myself how to letter, did not save any money, spent a lot of extra money.
I say saved a lot of coins there, huh?
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. And a big part of that was because learning how to letter actually sent me down a rabbit hole for graphic design, because I started learning graphic design as a way to improve my lettering, and then it all just kind of melded in together. And then through the combination of if something comes up, say yes, and then figure it out. And once you figure it out, that's a skill set that you can then use to progress even further along the path. I ended up going full time in comics within 2 years. And within 4 years, I had expanded Metal Ninja Studios. Now I have a team of 9 people supporting me and everything that we're doing within the studio to give back to the community as well as help creators. So all of it started with that little sticky note of 10 years to overnight success. And it basically transitioned into a mindset of no matter what happens, keep going and then see what happens after that 10 years. And then January is actually the 5 year, January 2024 is actually the 5 year anniversary of when I started Metal Ninja Studios. And if you had asked me 5 years ago if I thought I would be where I am now, no. And I can prove that because I had that sticky note that said 10 years. And here I am halfway through. And yeah, I don't know if that answered your question, but
No, that's aw that's an amazing answer. And I mean, you got to frame that sticky note, by the way, for sure. You got to lock that away and keep that. But I mean, that is just so cool, and I think so inspiring. And I think for a lot of people out there that, are watching and listening to this, especially if they have, aspirations for, working in the comic industry, that's just such a refreshing and good take to have. And I think that a lot of people from the outside looking in, like you said it perfectly, you see these people and you're like, oh, they just came out of nowhere. Like you said, overnight success. But you really look at it and like they've been putting in the hours in indie books or short stories or, whatever it is. So, like I said, I really love that approach and that kind of attitude towards comics because I think that's really what you have to have if you are gonna ever, hopefully make it. And I mean, like you said, you're halfway to that 10 year and you're already doing it. So, who knows what's gonna be at 10 years? You're gonna be like, I don't know, the CEO of comics of the world or something. I don't know, something crazy.
CEO of the world.
Yeah, CEO of the
I've got the
world.
mustache for it.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's actually interesting. I was having a conversation with Blake, my marketing manager, a couple days
Shout out
ago.
Blake. We love Blake.
Yeah, yes, Blake is the one who got us connected. So thank you,
Yes,
Blake.
buzz buzz baby, buzz buzz.
But we were talking marketing strategies, and one common, unfortunately, common pitfall that I notice in this industry in particular is a very short-term mindset on accomplishing goals. Everyone, I can't say everyone, but a lot of people who get into the industry get in hoping that their next break or their big break is right around the corner. It's very common, especially with new writers who come out with their grand 32 issue epic that they want to make to compete with Spider-Man. So it's very, it all comes back to delayed gratification in realizing that the only way that it's going to work long term is if you think about the long term. And where a lot of people are marketing their next book, I was talking to Blake and I'm like, okay, a lot of people are thinking about what's going to happen in the next 6 months. I'm thinking about what's going to happen in the next 6 years. And that difference in mindset, I think, has a lot to do with the progression that I've had because it makes it a lot easier for me to also stay focused as opportunities come up that may not necessarily help me towards that goal and that vision. A big part of that is actually came down to the maneuvering and strategizing as to how Metal Ninja Studios actually expanded, because I wanted to focus on helping more people make books. The studio started as a way for me to make books, and now I hardly make books because I spend most of my time either helping my client, helping my clients make books or helping my team work on bigger and bigger books. And as that focus has shifted, so too have my priorities. And those priority shifts have made it to where it's a lot easier for me to see things further out in the future, as opposed to just worrying about where my next book is coming from. And we can go down a huge rabbit hole as to why I think that's a problem with the industry, but yeah, that would be a rabbit hole.
Hey, we're here for all the rabbit holes, my friend. We'll get into it. I think you just have a very good outlook on it. And I mean, like, you're basically playing 4D chess while everyone else is playing 2D. And I love too how you use that to help other creators. And I mean, we over here are huge proponents for indie creators, and I just love that you, like you said, you started the studio for your own book. But now you've expanded it, and now you're helping more, writers and artists than you are doing it yourself. So I really love that. I think that's so needed in the community, and I think that a lot of people think that, which it can be for sure, that comics is a very kind of cutthroat kind of industry. But I think everyone can agree when we work together, that makes everybody's work better, So I just really love that.
You actually just touched on some of the founding principles of Metal Ninja Studios. A big reason why I wanted to do what I'm doing with the studio is because of how cutthroat this industry is. A lot of it has to do with the business side of things, where everything that we do is based on a commodity. And basically, a commodity is multiple people offering the same exact thing. Take lettering, for example. That's usually my go-to since that's how I got my start. Lettering rates haven't necessarily increased in the past 20 years. And the main reason for that is because everyone charges for the exact same thing. So if one person tries to raise their rates, then that client will just say, okay, well, I'm going to go over here and get the same exact thing for cheaper. And if one person tries to undercut the market, they get ostracized by the market because, oh, well, you're going against the grain and it starts a race to the bottom and it's just a horrible situation for everyone. When you have an entire industry built like that, like comics is, then it makes it to where everyone has to think about themselves first. And when that happens, no one wants to share trade secrets. No one wants to share any insights or education or anything that could help people, because when you're doing that, you're essentially training your competition to do things faster. And that's what it comes down to. Whoever can do the most pages faster gets to do this full time. Because the faster you can turn around a book, the more pages you can get done. That's the only way to make more money. And as you know, it takes money to live. So Metal Ninja Studios, the fact of building the studio is a direct contradiction to that model. Whereas we don't charge page rates, we charge based on project rates because we're adding value on top of what is normally there. And then, normally provided, I mean. And then we offer free education. Through the Metal Ninja Dojo, which is a blog and video offering that we started doing last month, where we have contributing writers who come in, they write information about how to make comics, and we give it away for free. And my team is required to, myself included, to pursue higher education on a daily basis. 1% better daily is one of the values of the company, because when you get stuck in a grind of needing to push and push and push and do more faster, you basically get into a rut and you stop growing. So, in order to combat the fact that everyone feels like they need to be super restrictive with the information that they provide, I wanted to build something to where not only did my team feel confident enough, but the community felt confident enough in what we did to where when we provide information, they can then trust that information, and then they will be able to take that information and grow themselves, thus raising the pool and the collective quality of the industry overall.
Wow, Again, I love that, dude. I seriously, that is so awesome. And I mean, I don't like how can you not get behind something like that? And I think it all kind of comes full circle also with your own story. I said before we started this, I want to talk about lettering. So let's get into some lettering stuff. So you were talking when, so you just decided to write this book and you said you wanted to get into lettering to save, quote unquote, save money, which ended up not happening because you were spending all your money on these courses and taking classes. And you said that you basically took every class that was available, but you also said that there wasn't many resources for you, like especially for lettering. So the fact that you now have turned that around and are now providing that resource for other people is just, I mean, it, like I said, it's just so awesome. It's so cool. But when you were taking those lettering classes and you kind of started on this journey, you said that you learned a lot about marketing and networking through that process, and that you learned a lot about what not to do. So I'm curious, as someone who doesn't know anything about lettering besides what I see on the page, what were some of those early things that you learned not to do that, you know, like really kind of started you off on your path?
I think one of the fastest lessons that I had to learn was that I always had room to grow. Because actually, what not to do would probably be looking at the stuff that I did previously and feeling bad about it. Like, I joke about Dust County Chronicles number one being my least favorite of the series just because it was the first book that I ever lettered. So the lettering is atrocious, but it was the first book and it was literally the first one I had ever done. So, of course, it's not going to look fantastic. But there are technique things that I learned there, like don't use these particular color combinations because it's the contrast is poor when it comes to legibility. There were plenty of mistakes that I made when I was learning print production. I remember in particular, there was one book that I was doing print production for that wasn't my book. It was a client's book. And I messed something up and they sent it to print. And everything for, I think, 6 pages out of the book printed all pixelated because of the mistake that I made. So that cost money, it cost quality. And I learned to never make the same mistake twice. And I learned that because of the fact that I made those mistakes. And when I made those mistakes, I tried to make sure that I made them on my own books, but the ones that were on clients' books, I learned a lot quicker.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Yeah, but in order to bring all of this back, I had to very quickly learn not to view mistakes as a negative, because that's one thing that cripples a lot of people when they're learning something new is I don't want to make a mistake. And I learned that it's not really the mistake that people are afraid of, it's the perception and how others are going to view you. They don't want to make a mistake because they don't want to look stupid. Like it all comes down to that. And in reality, none of us knew how to do anything in the beginning. Like I have a 3-year-old son or 2 going on 3-year-old son. I have literally watched him try to walk, fall, try to walk, fall, try to walk, fall over and over and over. And he doesn't care what anyone thinks. He's like, I will get this. And he just keeps trying. And that got me thinking about, okay, well, it's because he doesn't care what anyone thinks. He's willing to try new things. And when he tries new things, now he's running around like crazy. And he figured it out and he kept going. So it's the same principle to where if you're not afraid of what people think of your mistakes, then you're much more willing to try new things, to experiment with new things, develop new techniques, which I've developed techniques of my own as it relates to lettering. And all of that comes from not being afraid of looking stupid if I mess up. If I mess up, then yes, I mess up. I deal with it. I acknowledge it. I apologize for it. And then I move on. And taking it all back to Dust County number one, I joke that the lettering's atrocious because it is. But the fact that I can see that means that I have progressed 5 years worth of experience as opposed to where I was back then. So if I looked back at that first issue and was like, this looks perfect, that means that I had done nothing in the past 5 years. But yeah. Now the fact that I can look at it and instantly see at least 300 things wrong with it, that means that I have grown and learned those 300 things.
Wow. I love that. And just your attitude on the industry and your work is just, like I said, I really love your attitude about this kind of stuff. And I wanted to ask too, which I thought was super, super interesting. So, well, first of all, I want to ask too, just very quickly, why did you choose lettering? I just feel like it, like for people who are starting comics, I feel like you said, you were trying to save money. I would think like you would automatically like try drawing or coloring or something. So why did you pick lettering? I'm just curious.
Because I can't draw for crap. I cannot draw. I've tried, and that's one thing where I completely understand that in order to build a foundation, if I really wanted to learn how to draw, I could. But in order to build the foundation for drawing, you have to do all of the foundational work.
Yeah, true.
Which
it's a lot more than lettering.
Admittedly, I do not have the patience for. Whereas at the same time, I've always been fairly technologically intelligent and very good at picking up new technologies. And lettering, I view as the perfect hybrid of artistic freedom and writing because it's taking the flow and the cadence of the written word and pairing it with artwork in a way that only a letterer knows how to do professionally, because there are artists who think that they can letter. In some ways they can, but just how they need to spend years honing their craft to get anatomy right, letterers spend years honing our craft to get the cadence right for how someone's talking. And being able to look at a balloon and look at a page, see how the different balloons fit on a page, and know how someone's mental voice is going to hear those words on a page is something that can only be developed through years of practice. And I loved the fact that graphic design and lettering gave me a chance to express that creativity without starting from baseline zero, because I've always been interested in graphic design and different design elements and typography and things like that. So I had a bit of knowledge, but not much, admittedly. But I think a lot of that comes from my history with music and things like that, always having that creative drive to get into things. And of course, being a metal fan, everything with metal is fancy typography and make it look cool and just barely legible, depending on how dark you get into the metal. But all of that came back to, okay, I want to do something creative. I don't have the patience or the time frame to lay down those foundations for art. So instead, I'll pivot to this other thing that I feel I can pick up relatively quickly and then get better and better over time. And that's what happened.
Wow, that's awesome. And then you kind of led into this perfectly, but what I was alluding to earlier when I said something you said that I found very interesting. So you said that lettering can be more personal to the writer because you guys are translating their words and intent into the words on the page. And again, I found that very interesting because I never really thought of it that way. And I think a lot of people don't think of lettering that way, or like I said, give credit to the letterers and the actual work that they're doing. So can you kind of talk a little bit about what your process is like when you get a script, like taking a script and then putting that onto the page and into the bubbles? Because like I said, I never really thought about that. Obviously, everyone thinks of the artwork and the visual aspects of it. But like you said, the words are visually conveying what the author is trying to get across. So, like I said, I really find that interesting.
Yeah, I make a joke with some of the writers that I work with that I'm the first person that ever gets to read their comic. And it's true. No one thinks about it, but the letterer is actually the first person to ever read the comic in full.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes the... To your question, it all comes down to the spacing and the cadence. And for some letterers, when they translate it from the script to the page, it's, I don't like the phrase copy and paste, but in essence, it's the writer has written this block of text, so I will take that block of text and put it into a balloon. Mm-hmm. There's this other block of text. I will put this block of text into the balloon, and it's A for A. Whereas for me, that A can turn into A, B, and C, whereas I see this block of text, and as I'm hearing the character speak in my head, I think, okay, someone is going to have to breathe here. So that breath becomes a break in a balloon. And then, okay, there's going to be a slight dramatic pause here. That dramatic pause separates this balloon a little bit. And that understanding the breath work and the cadence that goes into a conversation translates into my personal lettering technique, to where I don't view it as people reading the words. They're hearing the words. That's like with sound effects. One thing you'll notice about my work and in translation, Metal Ninja Studios' work, is unless we're working on a kid's book, our sound effects will not have exclamation points or punctuation or anything like that. And that is something where it's not technically wrong to have punctuation, but following that same mindset of the reader hearing the words, the reader is going to hear the sounds. So if a sound effect says boom, the writer may script it as all caps boom with like 5 exclamation points. To me, that says they want a really big boom. The number of exclamation points equates to how big they want it.
Mm-hmm.
But another example is like 86 O's in boom. Like they want it really big. So what some letterers will do is they'll do boom and then exclamation. Technically, there's nothing wrong with it. But you're kind of on a scale of 1 to 10, you're at like a 5. How you take that to a 10 is drop the exclamation point, because a sound does not exclaim. A sound isn't shouting something. It just is. Mm-hmm. So how do you get that exclamation across? By making the sound effect itself more dynamic. You make it pop more. You make it interact with the artwork. Like, I love doing explosions because you can actually knock it out and make certain sections interplay with the artwork and just do these fancy things that don't detract from the art, but they actually take what was a B, 5 O's, an M, and 6 exclamation points, and turn it into 4 glyphs, B-O-O-M, that interplays with the artwork and gets the effect much more concisely than if we had had all those O's and exclamation points.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that comes down to the fact that when your reader is reading a comic, they don't look at it and read, boom. They look at it and they hear, and being able to translate that using as few glyphs as you can, and glyphs are letters and different symbols, using as few of those glyphs as you can while getting that same effect to resonate in your reader's head is what we do. And that's why some letterers are completely faithful to a breakdown of the script, especially as it relates to, like I said, block of text, block of text, block of text, block of text. But for me, I personally add a bit more of a creative flair to it, because I remember that when the writer is writing this script, they're not seeing the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't know how that final artwork turned out. They had their vision, and then the artist then took that vision and rendered it. So it's my job to take the intent from the original script and marry it to the artist's rendition of what the writer was originally envisioning. And that's not necessarily going to be an A to A translation. I'm not going to change the words, but I may break up balloons to help with the dialogue. I may take certain things and add a bit more of a bold effect to it so that it matches the artwork. I may do different spacing or different levels of emphasis and build emphasis throughout the page that wasn't necessarily in the script to begin with, but that's what we need to do to make sure that what's being said matches the art. Mm-hmm. One of the surefire ways that you can tell if a letterer is just going A for A is if you get a piece of artwork where someone's shouting and the sentence ends with a period. Because visually, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't resonate. And although the reader isn't going to be able to pick out what's wrong with that, something isn't going to sit right. It's, oh, that's weird, but I don't know what. It's our job to know what and to fix it so that isn't there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is just so interesting to me. I think that is so awesome. I could literally sit here and talk shop with you about lettering for hours, because that is just so interesting. And like I said, I think it's, again, lettering is something that a lot of people don't know much about. And I think a lot of people are under the assumption that a lot of it is, like you said, just a simple translation, like, oh, the writer wrote this, so I put it in a balloon here. But to hear like all of the nuance that goes into it and all of the craft, and it's just, like I said, I could sit here for hours and talk to you about lettering, but unfortunately we have to move on, because I do want to talk about the Dust County Chronicles, Nightfall specifically, which that's what we're really here to talk about. So issue 3 is coming out. Kickstarter is available now. First 2 issues have already been out. We've talked about the book a little bit throughout this interview as we're going on. You've described it as short stories that take a tale that you know and add a horror twist to it. And this began as an anthology series. The first 2 issues were, I think, a collection of 8 stories each.
Yep.
And then
8 stories collectively, 4 stories each.
Okay, so 4 stories each, 8 collectively. And that all came together in this new book, which is the Dust County Chronicles Nightfall. And you have described this as the Avengers of Horror, which I love that analogy. I thought that was so great. But so in this book, we basically follow one of your characters from those short stories. And it basically kind of accumulates all of these short stories together into one cohesive story. So I'm interested to know, with the main character of Lacey, like I said, I unfortunately, for our full disclosure out there, I didn't read the anthology series. I only had the first 3 issues of the Nightfall. But like I said, I know that she's from those original short stories. So is there a reason that you picked that particular story to start this, like you said, the Avengers meeting up of all the stories?
Yeah. So for a quick summary, I mean, I don't really have to summarize much of it. You did a really good job. But in the original Dust County Chronicles series, there are 2 stories in particular that formed the basis for Nightfall. And that is one called Just Right from Dust County issue number 1, and another one called Forever Young. In both of those stories, it ends with a particular character going missing. In Just Right, her name is Lacey. In Forever Young, there's a girl named Susan, or named Jenny. And those 2 characters go missing. Nightfall follows Lacey's sister as she comes into Dust County looking for her missing sister, because basically in the original Dust County short, Lacey was just passing through and she ran out of gas. Her car broke down. She needed to find some place to stay or find somewhere to get help. And she stumbles upon a cabin. And in Dust County, stumbling upon a cabin is a potentially fatal mistake. So Lori, she is trying to figure out what happened to her sister. So she's following GPS, stumbles upon Dust County. Susan is our other protagonist, and she is Jenny's mother. And there was a big falling out in the Dust County number one issue that basically there is a very dark activity that happens in the original story that kind of creates a very big snag in their relationship right before Jenny goes missing. So now Nightfall follows Susan, the mother, and Lori, the sister, as they individually and then through a series of events come together to try and find their missing loved ones. Mm-hmm. Whereas the reader, anyone who's read the original two Dust County books, they will have a bit more insight as to how we got to this point, but not necessarily what connects them. And then that is the part that I love about this series in particular, is it didn't necessarily start as, okay, I'm going to do these short stories, and then I'm going to do this thing to bring them all together. It's, I did two issues of short stories, and I was like, I want to write something longer. So I did. And then I got a chance to take parts from each of these stories and kind of intertwine them together. And that's where the Avengers of Horror comes from, because just like Iron Man and Captain America and all of these singular MCU movies come together for the Avengers, all of these Dust County shorts come together. And Nightfall, from what I hear, and it makes me really happy, Nightfall stands on its own. Mm-hmm. Anyone can pick up those three issues, read it, and feel content that they got a good story. But then if they do that and they go back and read Dust County 1 and 2, then they get to see how everything intertwines. And there are certain characters that have some pretty big reveals that tie back into those original issues, and it just adds one more layer of depth that I had a lot of fun writing.
Absolutely. And that was going to be one of my praises of the book, is, like I said, I unfortunately haven't read the first two of Dust County Chronicles yet, which I am 100% going to be doing my homework after this. But what I really loved about Nightfall is I was coming into it fresh, but I never felt like I was missing something. If anything, all I felt was, oh, I want to know more about this. Like, I know, like, there's something here that I don't know about, but I want to learn about it. You know what I mean? It never was like, oh, I don't know what this is talking about. It was more, it intrigued me than it confused me. So I think you did a phenomenal job with making it both accessible to a new reader, but if you did read the Dust County Chronicles, there is tons of stuff to treat you for reading those other short stories. So I think you absolutely nailed that aspect of it.
Thank you. Thank you. That's actually the part that I was the most scared of going into this. There were two things that really terrified me about making the transition from Dust County to Nightfall. Mm-hmm. And the first was I had no idea how to sell Nightfall. Like, For the first couple issues, Dust County 1 and 2, I had my pitch down flat. Like, there was a joke amongst my friends where I was basically a robot. Like, I had gotten, admittedly, up until about a year ago, I was horrible at talking to people. Like, the rapport that we have and the banter and all that, I was horrible at it. Like, I could sell Dust County, but the only reason I could sell Dust County was because I had it memorized to the point where I would just go through it like it was a script. The flaw of that is if anything would interrupt me, I couldn't pick it up. I had to restart. So I had friends who were complete jerks who would wait until I was mid-pitch and then ask me something and make me restart. So they are not great friends. I don't really talk to them that much anymore. But they cost me plenty of sales. But it's kind of funny, going back to higher continuing education, I actually took a course to learn how to talk to people because I didn't like that being a flaw of mine. Mm-hmm. But anyway, going back to the pitch, I got really good at pitching the Dust County Chronicles. Have you ever wondered what it would be like if Toy Story was a slasher? What about if Peter Pan required a sacrifice to enter Neverland? Well, that leads into the Dust County Chronicles, and then it goes on from there. But then I had to figure out a way to transition and say, yeah, these two issues, those are an anthology. But this one's connected, and it takes characters from all the anthologies and brings them in, but not just in this one issue. Like, there are more issues, but you can't read those yet because they're not done yet. But trust me, it's all connected.
Yeah.
Like, I could not figure out a good way to sell it. And then we finally get to the third issue, and I'm wrapping everything up, and then I'm like, Avengers of Horror. And it meets Cabin in the Woods, because Cabin in the Woods, the whole premise is there's a cabin that's secretly full of monsters. This is a county that's secretly full of monsters. And Avengers of Horror explains the format, and Cabin in the Woods helps break down the concept. So once I figured that out, it became much easier to actually talk about the book and explain it in a way that other people could understand. And going back to our marketing conversation, that's why that elevator pitch is so important for anyone learning how to make comics. That elevator pitch, once you figure it out, it can open up the world when it comes to talking about your book. But then on top of that, it was figuring out, okay, I'm investing in this, what eventually became a 5-year endeavor, because it's taken me 5 years to put out these five issues. When I made that transition from short stories to the mini series, I was like, I hope that this works, because Dust County has been successful. People have liked it. Now I'm going into this entirely new thing that I don't really know how to sell. And I'm going into it blind, hoping that it works and that it lands. And so far, what I've been hearing is that it's landing, and it is like a huge weight off of my shoulders, because it's been the past number of years just hoping that it works.
Well, let me take a couple more ounces off those shoulders because, like I said, I think it worked awesome and I really, really enjoyed the book. And I wanted to ask too, with the whole kind of Avengers of horror and everything, and the whole the world of Dust County. So you said this was about a year ago, I think. You were just focused on getting Nightfall finished, right? But so now that you have Nightfall relatively finished and you have the Dust County Chronicles, is there a future for more stories within Dust County, or are you looking to expand out of the Dust County? Because like you said, it's kind of like the anthology, and the thing that connects all these stories is them being in Dust County. And I love stuff like that, like the interconnectivity of it. So I can definitely see there being a lot more stories to be told in Dust County. So is that something that you are hoping to pursue, or are you looking to branch out into other maybe genres, or a different kind of anthology?
A little bit of both. There is one more Dust County short story that's going to be released fairly soon, as part of another anthology. But Roman is actually finishing drawing that, as we speak. But I'm going to be pivoting away to work on another book that I've had in the works for a couple years now. And I didn't want to do anything with it while doing Dust County. I wanted to focus on one and not cross cannibalize, essentially. And then eventually, I think I may end up coming back to Dust County, but it's when I do, I want to make sure that I do it right and make sure that I put the time into it. Because one thing that I really inspired me was actually Derry, Maine from the Stephen King universe. Because just like Dust County is a character, which I can't take credit for this part of it at all, because I was actually on a podcast and someone said this to me and I was like, you're right.
Put it in the
Exactly.
movie.
They said it's like Dust County itself is the main character, and I was like, I meant to do that.
Yeah, you're like, you know what? Yeah, it
Yeah, so although this is what I did, it they put it in much better words than I ever could, so I'm stealing their words. That's a true writer right there. But basically, with Dust Count, although we're following Lacey and Lori and Susan and Jenny and all these different characters within Dust County itself is the character. Like, the individual people may come and go, but this place of darkness that is Dust County is forever. And like, there are certain characters that I'm sure people would love to know how they got into their particular situations, whether they're vampiric or whether they're a cop. Just these different ground or different breadcrumbs that I laid throughout the series, there are countless different ways that I could pursue different Dust County stories. And eventually, I think I plan to. But like I said, I've been working on Before My Eyes, which is this other series, for a couple years now. And I'm excited to get that one off the ground, too.
Hell yeah. Well, I'm excited to read it because you definitely have a fan in me now. Because, like yes. I said, I really loved the Nightfall. And I think what really sold it for me was not just the monsters and the creepiness, which I love that stuff. Don't get me wrong. But it was the relationship, like the sister relationship and the mother-daughter relationship, and like the theme of, I guess you, I'm trying to think of the right way to put this, but like not finding your love, but like finding that thing you're searching for no matter what gets in your way. And I think that's really what I related to in the book. And again, like what really sold me on it. And then on top of that, you got awesome, cool monsters and like vampires and, you know, crazy toys and stuff. So it was just, it's just a good time, man. It was really, I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. That means a lot. And I mean that so sincerely, especially knowing that you haven't read the original two Dust County books, because it was written with the understanding that I knew everything going on. And like I said, the biggest fear for me was that anyone going into Nightfall by itself wouldn't have a clue what was going on. So the fact that that is your impression, it means the world to me, because it means that it was years that led to success.
Yeah, it worked, man. And like I said, if anything, for me, it didn't. The questions that came when I was reading, the questions that came about in my head, it wasn't like, oh, I don't know what this is going on. Again, for me, it was, I want to know. So like that just gave me more of a reason and a want to go back and read the original short stories. Because like I said, now I want to know everything now. I need to know, okay, how did this start? What about this dude and this lady? And, you know, again, so if anything, it just piqued my interest to go and devour more of it. So like I said, I think
that's awesome.
You freaking nailed it, my man. And I cannot wait for all the stuff that you got going on. And again, with Metal Ninja Studios, we've talked about it throughout the interview here, but I love all the things you guys are doing over there. I think it's so important. And I think it's something that the community really needs. And for you to fill that void, especially with your journey, I think it's just, it is so awesome. And if I had a hat, I would tip it to you, my friend, because like I said, that you're a very inspiring guy and your journey into comics is very inspiring. And for you to give that back to other people, it's just awesome, man. It's awesome. I can't praise you enough for that. But before we get out of here, I could keep you all day long and we could talk about lettering, Dust County, all that stuff. But unfortunately, I know you're a busy guy and you got stuff to do. So one of my last questions I got for you, and this is something we ask all our guests, is just, what are you reading these days for fun? Like not, and I know, especially in your position, I'm sure that you are reading hundreds of things for like clients and for research purposes. But like, I'm talking when you got some free time, you're chilling at the house, what are you picking up to read for, you know, inspiration or like I said, just for fun?
So if you really want to know what I'm reading right now, it is a book that is called Project Management for Humans.
Beautiful. And I like you said, always learning, man, always improving, which is another thing I love about you.
Yeah. So in all honesty, I don't take much free time. I have a fun little hobby that I started doing recently of lock picking. That's been fun, and it's the first hobby that I've had that doesn't cost me thousands of dollars. My main hobby and my main passion outside of comics is obstacle course racing and health and fitness and things like that. But As it relates to reading, admittedly, I don't really read comics anymore just because I spend so much time making them and coordinating with the team. And by doing all of the work in the industry, I admittedly don't take time out to consume anymore. It's actually been a problem, and I've had to work reading comics into my routine to make sure that I would at least stay up to date with some of the stuff happening in the industry. Because, like I said, you get so stuck in a routine that you or get so stuck in the grind that you kind of segment yourself off from the world and isolate yourself so that you become this individual silo. That happened to me multiple times throughout the past 5 years because I don't do social media. I am absolutely horrible with it. I understand nothing about it, and I have no desire to learn it. So I have been extremely grateful of the fact that my entire career up until probably the last year has been all through word of mouth. I haven't done any marketing, any promotion. There was a vast amount of time where I never looked for a client. They always either came to me or were brought to me. And of course, the stuff that I did definitely helped because of my freelance work. I spent time as head of design for Scout Comics, and there were a bunch of things that led to my or lent themselves to my credibility, but it's the fact that I didn't have to market. All of that to say, it's a good thing I didn't have to market because I wasn't even reading comics. I wasn't on social media. I was just working. Like, that was it. We mentioned Blake, my marketing manager. I brought him on because now that I have a studio and now that other people rely on me, I kind of need to bring in more clients, and I need someone who knows how to do social media, and that's not me. So all of that to say, it's been a huge problem for me over the past few years to where I'm very regimented. I'm very hyper focused. And when that happens, I don't read much. I don't read much in terms of entertainment or consuming entertainment, which is really bad when you're someone who works in the entertainment industry.
It
So,
seems to be working out for
yeah, for the most part, I just call it luck. Something came
though.
up. I said yes, and then I figured it
Yep.
out. But the most recent thing that I read, and this shows how out of date I am, I just recently finally sat down and read The Last Ronin.
Oh, okay. Great pick.
Yes. As a turtle fan, as a lifelong turtle fan, I was like, all right, a dark turtle story. I definitely got to read it. And I wanted to read it. And the entire time the series was coming out, I was like, I got to read it. And then I never did until like a week ago.
Well, you're ahead of me because I still haven't read it, but I know how great it is. And like you said, I mean, Dark Turtles, like, take my money now. That's all I need.
Exactly. Yep, exactly.
But that's awesome, man. And like I said, I just really like your journey into comics and the things that you do in comics now, I think is just very, like I said, awesome and inspiring. And I think a lot of people out there that don't know your story and stuff will definitely feel the same way. 'Cause like I said, you're an awesome guy, man. And like I said, I can't
Thank you.
praise you enough. And for all the stuff that you do for the community and for yourself and Metal Ninja, it's just, again, if I had a hat, I'd be tipping it off to you. But I gotta say, thank you so much for coming on and nerding out with me today. It has been absolutely so fun to have you. And now I want to throw it off to you. I know that you just said that you're not a big social media guy, but let's see, Dust County Chronicles. So the Kickstarter is out right now. Tell the people where you
Yes.
can find that, where they can find you, Metal Ninja. This is your time to plug yourself.
Perfect. So I may not be a social media guy, but luckily Metal Ninja Studios isn't just me. We've got a guy for that. You can find the Kickstarter at metalninjastudios.com/Kickstarter. You can find Metal Ninja Studios social media links on our link tree, which you can get to via metalninjastudios.com/links. And then while Metal Ninja Studios is not currently accepting new clients, I do still offer free consultations to anyone who may be interested in working with us in the future, or also anyone who has questions about how to make comics. One thing that's very important to me is, again, providing education and content. And another way that I do that is by volunteering my time to talk to people who want to make comics, regardless of whether or not they're going to eventually become a client. And you can do that through metalninjastudios.com. There's a link to book a consultation, and you'll have 45 minutes to sit down with me and ask any questions you want. So that's where you find me. That's where you find the book. That's where you find the studio. And thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast of a conversation. I've really enjoyed it, and I would love to come back whenever you want me.
Oh, my dude, it is an open door policy on our end.
Yes.
Anytime you want to come, if you want to come just nerd out about stuff, if you got something to promote, whatever it is, just shoot me a message, man. We'll make it happen. Because like I said,
definitely.
Open door, you are always welcome back. Everyone out there, please make sure to go support the Dust County Chronicles Nightfall issue 3. I'm going to be putting all the links that Joel just mentioned down in the description, so go check that out. You'll be able to find Metal Ninja, the Kickstarter, all that great stuff. Again, Joel, I can't thank you enough for being here with me today. It has been so much fun. If you guys enjoyed this conversation, please consider giving us a subscribe and a like. We got so much more stuff coming for you. But for now, I think that's going to be it. Unfortunately, we have to get out of here. So again, Joel, thank you for being here. Thank all of you guys for listening. Be sure to stay hydrated out there. I hope all of your stacks are fat this week, and we will see you all next time.
I'm going to do this all day.